Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, happy Monday to you. I hope it is a reasonably happy Monday for you. Brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Jaguars Today kicking off on this Monday. Tony, where to begin? I mean, the Jags did battle back. They battled back. They took the lead and gave it right back. The defense, atrocious yesterday. The offense, spectacular yesterday. Can you pick nits on either side? Did the defense make some plays? Certainly they did. Did the offense make some mistakes? Certainly they did. But if you came away from that game yesterday and you want to point the finger of blame at the offense, we weren't watching the same football game. Special teams, that's another story. Coverage wasn't bad. Can't miss extra points. And now six on the season for Jason Myers, Tony.
Yeah, I think I saw nine were missed in the NFL this week. Extra points.
It did seem like there was a rash of them going on yesterday.
Well, I don't know. That's just a weekly thing. I think you're watching a Jaguars team yesterday, and a lot of people all season long have been calling, why doesn't this team blitz, 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 blitz? We got to blitz. We got to put pressure on the quarterback. Well, you do have to put pressure on the quarterback, but it's a double-edged sword, and it showed up yesterday big time. I mean, they brought pressure, and it worked sometimes. And when it didn't, it was huge plays for that Tennessee offense, and it bit them. In the end, that's what led to a lot of the big plays for the Titans offense, was the Jags brought blitzes that didn't get there, and it created opportunities for huge plays.
I don't mind giving up some big plays on the blitz, right? When it gets picked up and the quarterback stands in the pocket and he hits that open guy down the field, Tony, there's no excuse for not tackling the quarterback. Dwayne Gratz has a shot. No. You got to bring him down, right, on that play. Heck, one of the big plays they had, it was I think it was early fourth quarter. It was a 3rd and 10, okay? And the Jags sent 3, and they dropped 8. And Mariota never had to take his eyes off Delanie Walker. He just stared him down in the middle of the field and connected with him for 20 yards. Like, who do you think the ball's going to on 3rd and 10 in that circumstance? Those are the ones that drove me as crazy as anything yesterday. If you want to get in today, and I'm sure a lot of you do, at least I hope a lot of you do, I hope the apathy is not going to set in. I hope the anger is still there, because I know Jag fans are passionate about the team, but I get it, man. When you get punched in the gut enough times, you're just like, all right, well, great. Now we've got Indy coming in next week. Big whoop. I mean, they're 4-8 right now, Tony. The Jags pretty much have to win their final four games to have a shot at the AFC South.
They got to have a lot go their way.
If you can't beat...
Winning four is not enough.
Well, they've got to win four. And basically, Houston and Indy, when they play each other, whoever wins that game can't win another. And whoever loses that game could only win one more, but not against Jacksonville. That's basically the situation there. But come on, let's not kid ourselves. You can't beat a 2-win team at home and then a 2-win team on the road. Who are you going to beat? I mean, you may win a game, may win a couple. Can't expect them to run the table. So, realistically, and maybe a lot of Jaguar fans are already in this camp, the chasing after the AFC South has pretty much gone out the window. It doesn't mean they're not going to try to win football games. Obviously, they're going to try to win football games, but
it changes the tenor of the whole season compared to what it was 2 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
2 weeks ago, you're 4-6, and you feel like, okay, we got an opportunity to really get on a roll here in Jacksonville. And look, they couldn't get it done against San Diego, and even more disappointingly to me, couldn't get it done against Tennessee yesterday, at least the way they didn't get it done against Tennessee yesterday, and now you're 4-8 and it's done. The 2015 season effectively is done when it comes to any kind of postseason talk, and once again, it's going to be a conversation for the next month about, you know, where is this team improving? Where is it not improving? Where does that lack of improvement, if you're not seeing it, where does it fall? Who needs to take responsibility for this team not getting done what it could have done in December? And unfortunately, that's the conversation that we're going to have now.
Can we agree? I think you and I, and I'm almost asking this rhetorically, that the quarterback is not the question that needs answering. That quarterback question has been answered emphatically, has it not?
I don't think offense is a big question, honestly. I think you can talk offensive line a little bit. But I think that's an NFL thing.
Depth at running back. I mean, depth issues. But
I know people point to offensive line a lot. Look around the league. There are probably 3 or 4 teams that feel good about what they have on the offensive line. That's the truth. Just guys that size that can do what they're called to do in the NFL, it's hard to find the right guys and right pieces. So I think that's almost a universal NFL problem. But the Jags obviously need to do something about the offensive line. The skill positions, tight end, running back, quarterback, I feel good
if
about
you,
that.
If you come back with the same wide receiver core that you have right now, next year healthy, you're good, right?
I mean, you got the
Allens, you get Marquise Lee, Rashad Green, and Brian Walters as a healthy fivesome. You're set.
Yeah.
You're good. Julius Thomas healthy to start the season. TJ Yeldon, you're good at the key skill positions. Now, again, depth behind TJ
sure.
and Denard, sure. But that's
just why it's going to be a lot of defense this offseason.
A ton of defense, both in the draft and free agency, you would expect. Yes, we just did say the D word, and we're creeping closer to that kind of territory right now. But for today, we're asking you the fan feedback spotlight just to get you rolling today. And you're certainly welcome to call the program at 641-1010 and talk about any aspect of yesterday's game, this team as a whole, the front office, the coaching staff, whatever you like. At 641-1010 or also on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, although I dare some of you last week who suggested Blake Bortles was the problem and needed to be benched. Please reiterate your stance today and love to hear what you think about that after yesterday where he improved to 27-13 touchdown to interception ratio. Broke, shattered already through 12 games, the single-season passing touchdown mark is within striking distance of the single-season yardage mark for the Jacksonville Jaguars in his second year at the helm. But the question of the day is this. Was that, all things considered, Tennessee on the road, the most disappointing loss of the season for you as a Jags fan? And if it wasn't, which one still stings the most? We're not trying to rub it in the wounds. We're just trying to get to the bottom of, was this the kind of the final straw of the season for you as a Jaguar fan? Again, 641-1010 for both the phone line and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony. We'll hear some post-game sound following yesterday's contest. We'll also hear from Johnny O, and we'll take plenty of your calls. In fact, phone lines open to you right now if you'd like to get on board and talk about any aspect of Jaguar football. Go around the league a little bit later on as well and get caught up on all the different playoff scenarios that are now much, much less unrealistic, including your team here in Jacksonville. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Just getting rolling. We're live at EverBank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Offensively, did some really good things. Got some red zone things corrected. Thought we performed well there. But defensively, a lot of missed tackles. I know we were trying to get creative, rushing 3, 4, 5, 6. At times we rushed 7, trying to find a way to get pressure on the quarterback. And, give them credit. They did a nice job running the ball and keeping plays alive, keeping series alive.
That's Gus Bradley talking to Jeff Loggeman outside the locker room yesterday, immediately following the Jaguars' defeat at the hands of the Tennessee Titans, which is frustrating, is one of the adjectives you could use to describe that. But here's one from Duval Doom coming in on Twitter. A kicker and a decent snap and none of those, quote, big plays on defense beat us, though. Look, it's a combination of things. Somebody called in the postgame yesterday and said, look, it's not all the kicker's fault. Nobody suggested it was. But he played a role.
He certainly did.
He played a role. You lead the league. And look, I got people tweeting me, stats on he's the most accurate field goal kicker in Jaguars history based on his percentage of makes. He's only missed 4 field goal attempts this year. Can't miss extra points, Tony. You can't miss. He's missed some of the field goals he missed have been some of those crucial ones of the year as well. And a regulation against Indy and an overtime against Indy. Missed the 2 yesterday. Bad snap, kick the laces. I really don't care, quite frankly. You're a kicker. Pound it through the uprights. I mean, I know it's not that simple, but you cannot go out there on a day when your team is having to keep pace up and down the field with a team that's scoring at will on you, and you're scoring at will on them, and lose by 3 because you missed 2 extra points, and on another one, they went for 2 because, quite frankly, I don't think they trust you. Gus Bradley, and I don't blame him at that point for going for 2. I know it's early. You talk about chasing points. We said we wanted to give him a spark. Look, plenty of teams in the NFL are experimenting with going for 2 earlier in the game. We saw it last night. Pittsburgh scored to go up 12-10. Instead of kicking the extra point, they went for 2 to make it 14-10. It wasn't
Pittsburgh's been doing that all year.
Right, and that's my point. It wasn't so much about the score. It was more about the fact that they just, when they feel like they've got to play, they go out and run it, particularly early in the game.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Tony. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, look, I wouldn't have gone for 2 that early. despite the fact that they had missed that extra
point. I wouldn't have either, but I don't have an issue with
it. I'm not mad at Gus Bradley for making that decision in the game. I'll say this. The Jaguars have played 12 games now this year. Three of them you can talk about Jason Myers having an impact on the way that they had to call the game in the fourth quarter because of what he had done before it, or missing a potential game-winning kick in Indianapolis. That's a quarter of their games. He's been very much involved in the outcome, and whether or not they were going to win or lose that game because of something he had done earlier in that game or an opportunity he was given. And I'm not saying that if they had decided to keep Scobie, that number would be any lower or any different. I don't know. I know Josh was terrible in Pittsburgh this year. We all like Josh, but he was awful in Pittsburgh for the short time that he was up there this year, and maybe he would have been the same here in Jacksonville. I don't know. I know that it's not a new issue with Myers, and it's also not today that anyone who's talking about Myers is not saying this is the reason that we lost that game yesterday. No, there are so many reasons that they lost that football game yesterday. It's not Myers' fault, but he certainly is a part of why they wound up losing that football game to Tennessee.
It's a contributing factor, right? No question about it. All right, let's hear one cut from Gus on going for two, and then we'll go right to the phone lines today at 641-1010. Here is Gus Bradley on that decision to go for two early in the game.
I think we needed some momentum going our way, some energy going our way. I think the chart said not to go for two there. It said to kick the extra point, but it was on me. I decided to go for two there just to try to stimulate our guys and get the energy back to where, all right, it's tied up. You know, what took place. Let's move on.
Yeah, look, again,
that card away.
At the time when they ran out there, I said it. You know, JP and I were in here watching the game. I said I wouldn't go for two. I'd kick it right now. But it wasn't one of those, like, oh, I thought that turned the tide of how the game was going to play it out. Let's say he makes it. Okay, good. You go for one and he makes it. He missed another one. It really wouldn't have made a difference in the outcome of the game. Make the kick. Make the first one, and there's no question about
make
going
the kick.
For two
make
on
one
the
of,
second one.
One of 15 tackles. Is December where tackling goes to die in the National Football League? I'm serious. With the rules they have on limiting the contact the players can have during the week, we already know tackling's an issue across the league, but when we get to this time of year and you really are at the back end of this whole grind, it just feels like every year this month it gets really, really bad in the NFL, the tackling.
I believe that's what Desmond wants to talk about. He's going to lead us off today. Good morning, Desmond. You're on Jaguars today. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are y'all, man?
Good. What's up?
I'm really frustrated, you know, with the team. I mean, defense can't tackle. I mean, the offense, they fighting and clawing back into the game. I mean, Brake Boys do a perfect game. I mean, and the defense can't tackle. Where's Noose supposed to be a veteran? And he hiked the ball over the man head. I mean, come on. I feel as the defensive coordinator, it's about time for him to go. The game plan should be cover Delanie Walker. Y'all let this man go to the grocery store, take candy, and just walk out the store without trying to arrest the man. I mean, what can we do? We
at least give him like a trespass warrant or something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, you have momentum going into the San Diego game, and you let a 2-8 team beat us then. Then you let another losing streak at home, and guess who break the losing streak against? The Jaguars, like Temple, not Tennessee. I mean, I'm looking forward to losing the rest of the game because I feel like the team ain't playing with enough energy no more. They road killed us. I mean, it's over now. I mean, look, here you go again. And the number one draft pick is go to Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, here you go. And I just take the comments off the air, man.
All right. Thank you, Desmond. I don't think the Jags will be earning the number one overall pick. But
And it's part of the reason that, look, I'm not going to talk draft yet.
But I don't mind people mentioning it because I can understand if you've mentally turned the page.
And part of the reason I'm not going to talk draft is because I have no idea if they're going to pick third or 14th. Right. I mean,
it's
really
been a lot easier the last few years figuring it out.
It's not like they're in a position like they have been the last couple of years to say, yep, let's see if they're going to wind up at one. You know, and that's kind of been the position they've been in for the last handful of years. This year, it's not that. It's certainly fans should be disappointed because 2 weeks ago, they were coming into that San Diego game. They had won 3 out of 4. They were 4-6 with an opportunity against a couple two-win teams
bad
at that
teams.
Point. to get to 500 on the season and then see what happens.
You'd be tied for first
right.
place.
Just
right
see what happens if you can win those two games against bad teams. So whatever level of frustration you're feeling today, it's warranted. What they've done the last 2 weeks is not good enough, and it's been a different story each of the last 2 weeks as to how they lost both those games.
Let's go to James in St. Johns County next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, James.
Well, I don't know if I got enough time to lay all this stuff out, but let me start. Beginning of the year, I wasn't sure if Bortles was our quarterback or not. He's changed my mind, although he's got to stop with the inconsistency of throwing the picks at crucial times. It's not just picks. It's just at critical times he throws these picks. You got to get better at that. But he wasn't a problem this game. Our defense was not good. I mean, Gus is supposed to be the guru of defense, right, coming from Seattle. I don't think he's done his job. I think he's got to get up out of here. Thirdly, I've got to thank the kicking game. I disagree with y'all. I think Myers has been the cause of our we lost two games this year because of him. If he had just made field goals, we lost those two games. And then this game, here, you know, he comes in, misses two extra points, and because of that, we had to go for two, which if we would have made all of those, we'd have been at the very least, it would have been a tie game and an opportunity to win that game. And so he has caused us, you know, to lose two and then maybe even, you know, win another one. But I think it's time. He shouldn't be there. I know we can't say Scobie would have made those, but I feel more confident with Scobie, and it was a money issue. They got rid of him because of the money, and I think it was a poor decision on Caldwell to get rid of him for the for that money. I you know, I can't say for sure he would have made him. I know he did bad in Pittsburgh.
Hold on. Let me just add. Why do you know definitively that they got rid of him because of the money when they're so far under the salary cap? And kickers make relative peanuts compared to other positions.
But, I mean, it wasn't like Myers made a few long field goals. I mean,
Myers outperformed him all summer long in practice and
mini camps.
Well,
he ain't outperforming him now. I mean, he's
I understand
right
that,
now.
But what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to ignore your eyes after months of – and let me ask you, look, I don't want to beat the dead horse on this, but if Josh Scobie – was such a hot commodity, how come he hasn't even had a single workout, to my knowledge, with any team? And plenty of teams have changed kickers since the start of the year.
I give you he played horrible in Pittsburgh. I give you that. But I mean, if you look
we're getting sidetracked on a small okay. point here on that. So,
all right, so I'll leave it at that. But I think Gus with the. I mean, ultimately, I mean, I don't think Gus is going to be able to move this team. I mean, and he's not. The defense hadn't looked great this year. That's what his specialty is supposed to be. And our defense hadn't looked good, so I'll take it off there. But
I got you. All right, James. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Listen, let me just say this about Myers. When you say he did cost us the game, well, you could say that. He cost them 2 or 3 points, however you want to. Let's say he cost them 3 points because they went for two and didn't make it. Well, you could say Wisniewski cost you 7. So then Wisniewski cost you more than Myers did. It's a team loss. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
The defense, Wisniewski snap. Myers, those are the main culprits in this game. The rest of the offense, pretty good. I'm not saying, again, not flawless, but pretty damn good when you're 6 for 6 in the red zone. You hang 6 touchdowns on the board. That's more than you'd expect going into any particular
sure.
game.
Look,
so,
and it's a question that we've been asking all year, and it's going to continue to be asked because of the number of fans who aren't convinced that Gus Bradley should be given an opportunity in 2016. These questions are going to be continue to be asked about what is wrong with the Jaguars defense, especially since Gus Bradley is a defensive guy that was brought in here to fix that side of things. I think they've been really, really good against the run this year. And this offseason, they focused in on trying to bring in guys that could help them with that. They brought in Audric. They brought in Skuda. Those are not guys they brought in to be pass rushers. Those are guys they brought in because they said, we need to get better against the run. That's why they signed those guys. They're better against the run this year. They draft Fowler to be the pass rushing difference for this football team. He's not here.
Right, and by
now,
himself might not have been enough,
no.
But he was supposed to be a major step in the right direction.
Year 3 is when they finally got around to really addressing that. Now, the question is, do you put it on Bradley that he doesn't have Fowler available to him this year, and the pass rush is still as bad as it is, and that's causing all kinds of issues. It's a domino effect with this football team right now because they just can't rush the passer effectively without having to send 5, 6, 7 guys at times, and we saw the effect of that yesterday in that game. It created some opportunities for the Jags defense, and it killed them at times in the secondary. So is that on Gus, and he needs to be let go because he hasn't found a way to fix everything else on the defense? Or does he get another year when he actually has the piece that Dave Caldwell is intending to give him? I don't know. I don't think it's an easy question to answer. And it's why when they were 4-6 and it looked like they could get some momentum in this season, it was so important to me that they took advantage of that opportunity. They just haven't been able to. And now the questions just get louder and louder and louder as we approach January.
All right, let me get one more in before we break here. Let's go to Jason at the Town Center up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
All right. I just wanted to start off by saying, okay, you know, I'm a Jaguars fan. Go Jag. And it seems like the past couple of years we've been having the same motto. This is our year. It's going to be our year. We're going to do it. But it also seems like while other teams are out there preparing for the Super Bowl, and that's their goal, Super Bowl or bust, our goal is only wild card or 7 games or bust. You know, and we should be having higher hopes. You know, we're just trying to be in ball games. We're not trying to dominate ball games. You know, we're not even thinking about being the top dogs of the division. You know, we're just trying to, like I said, get a wild card spot. So,
Who says that? That's not what the team says.
I'm not saying the team says that, but I'm around town. I talk to other fans and
right. But
you know,
don't you think it's realistic that you don't go from, we won 2 games, 4 games, 3 games the last 3 years. We should go Super Bowl or bust this year. I mean, doesn't it usually come kind of incrementally?
That's my point, though. My point is that we're just only trying to go to 6 games this year. Now, maybe 7 games next year. We're not even thinking about Super Bowls or, you know, divisions. You know, we're just trying to be in the hunt.
But they're not. It'd be like saying, I mean, who's the worst team in the league right now? The Cleveland Browns. Should the Cleveland Browns be thinking about the Super Bowl? I mean, they're terrible. You don't go from terrible to the Super Bowl. Why am I hearing an echo in my headset? Finish your point.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure either.
My point, my other thing that I was getting to, this is a more question. I heard you guys, before you went on break, you were saying that the defense is probably where we should start focusing at. So my question would be that is, out of the 3 cores, the D-line, the linebackers, and the secondary, if you had to keep 2 groups, but you can only reshape one of the groups, which group would you reconstruct? Like, the other 2 groups have to stay the same.
I'd probably reconstruct the D-line because there's 0 pass rush, quite frankly.
D-line?
And even if you have good players, look, it's a silly question because you're just making a hypothetical that no one has to do. You don't have to focus on only one area of the football team and leave the rest intact. That's not how it works. So it's a silly question. But if you're asking me what needs the most fixing, it's the pass rush. And if they don't have pass rush, that's where it comes from, is your defensive line, if you're a 4-3 team. So, yeah, and again, I think every level of the defense needs an infusion of talent. So it's not just one thing, Tony, and by the way, this is not a new thing. It's not reactionary to this game. Pretty much anyone who follows this team has known this next draft is going to be defense-centric,
yes,
very heavily, possibly, you know, 7 out of 8 picks kind of heavy to the defensive side of the football. So it's not trying to make it a reactionary thing here. We got to take a break.
Yeah, look, they have a position on this defense called Leo that they haven't been able to find anybody that can do it yet. I mean, in 3 years, they haven't found anybody that can do it. They thought they had one in the draft this year. He's not here. He's not available to this football team. And look, I think there is something to be said for how many issues they had to deal with in trying to build this team up. They drafted the quarterback last year. That looks like it's working out for him. And they focused on offense in that 2014 draft. Those guys look like they're panning out for the most part. You're at least getting ultra high-end production out of Bortles and Robinson, and that's enough, you know, with those guys being the 2 of your first 3 picks last year. So you got to find some way to fix the defense, and they tried to start taking a look at that last year, and unfortunately Fowler got hurt.
All right, we got to take a break here. 641-1010 if you want to get on board and voice your opinion on Jaguar football. That's the way to do it. It's a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
First and goal, Jags from the 8-yard line. Shotgun for Bortles. Rolling to the right. Blake looks. Pump fake. Looks. Got away from a defender. Fires into the end zone. Diving attempt by Allen Robinson. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Bortles to A-Rob for the score.
He is an absolute monster.
He's been making those plays all year long. So for him to go up and, you know, even the high balls and stuff like that, you know, ability to make plays in tough situations, heightened third downs in the red zone.
You know, that is a shame, Tony. It's not like we don't recognize the offensive performance from yesterday, but, you know, feel like you're glossing over the parts that need improvement when you just focus on that. But what a tremendous day for Blake Bortles and Allen Robinson.
Could have been a coronation day, honestly.
I mean, really could have been.
I mean, with five touchdowns from Blake Bortles, with no interceptions, with the interceptions having been a problem as much as they have, with the red zone success, with the setting the single season touchdown mark for a quarterback in a season, now 27, it looks like Blake will become the first one in the franchise's history to throw for 30 touchdowns in a year.
Hell, he's 35.
He's going to get around the 4,000 mark this season as well. He's probably going to break that barrier, could push for Mark Brunell's single season record in that. You have your first 1,000-yard receiver since 2005, since Jimmy Smith was here. And all that kind of gets overshadowed by the fact that you couldn't stop anybody on that Tennessee side of the ball.
And, oh, by the way, Allen Robinson set the single-season touchdown reception record yesterday as well for the Jaguars with four games to go. So, you know, I'll say that, you know, you look at criticism of Dave Caldwell, and certainly you can critique him and criticize him for bad picks that he makes. You know, I'm not holding Dante Fowler Jr. against him. You know, that's just pure dumb luck, but to me, the bottom line is, had he not hit on Allen Robinson, had he hit on nothing but Blake Bortles, it's the most important selection. I remember, Tony, when Gene Smith drafted Blaine Gabbert, right, who finally looks like, after years of being a pouty baby, is ready to play some decent football. But we said at the time, no matter how many misses Gene Smith has, if he hits on Gabbert, he'll be considered a success, because that's the most important position. It's that much more important than every other position out there. So while Caldwell's had his misses, it doesn't appear like Blake Bortles is one of them, and it wasn't the obvious selection at number three in the draft last year, right? I mean, there are a couple of people who point out, Hayes Carline predicted that he would take Blake Bortles, but not many people were saying that they would take Blake Bortles, and if they took a quarterback, Manziel or Bridgewater, not too many Carr people, as I recall, but it was, you know, Bortles was, you remember, the selection got booed on draft night.
It did.
And as recently as last week, we had people questioning whether he needed to be benched. And look, I get it. The mistakes are bad. They do need to be improved. Blake Bortles still has hurt you with those untimely interceptions, but man, is he doing his best to make up for it on the other side of the ledger? And, you know, that's what you talk about. You talk about a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. And for him to go from 11-17 last year to 27-13 right now is absolutely phenomenal.
No, it is. It's, and you're right. I mean, it's when he drafted Bortles, we all said clock starts.
Yes.
On Dave Caldwell, clock starts. And this is either going to work or it's not with Blake Bortles. And that's it. For Dave Caldwell, as far as how he's going to be ultimately judged as a general manager. And I think there have been hits outside of that. A-Rob is his, too. Telvin Smith is his, too. I mean,
Allen Hurns.
Right. He's made these selections. He's brought these guys in that look like they could be the core of something good for this team going forward. It's trying to figure out what you need to get over whatever it is that's getting in their way in the late part of these games. And sometimes it is Blake Bortles. Sometimes it is the defense not making tackles. Sometimes it is that they just can't rush the passer at all. Sometimes it is a young kicker that, again, that was his decision too, has gotten in their way this year as well. I think there's a lot of things you can point to that have gone wrong for this team in the fourth quarter, and I think there's a lot that you can point to that's gone right when it comes to Blake Bortles and the decisions that Dave Caldwell has made as well.
6-4-1-10-10 Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Go Monday. Let's go out to Justin on the south side next up here on 1010XL. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning. What's going on, fellas?
What's up?
Hey, I got one question, and then I'm going to make a point. How many sacks did we have last year? Like 40-plus?
45, I think it was.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, which was like, you know, top five or something like that.
Yeah, so somewhere in that range, right, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and Cindric Marks is out, and then our draft pick with high hopes never made it on the field. So
correct.
For the past 10 years, I'm a diehard fan. The biggest three things is we need a quarterback, we need to get vertical, and we need to get to the quarterback. Well, we're doing two out of three in 2 years, and it's like people are expecting us to be a playoff team, and we should beat teams, the bad teams. Well, you know what? The teams we beat are saying the same thing about us. It's like, at least we're watchable. We're talking about blowing games in the fourth quarter. At least we're in the game. I mean, I can remember the three runs and punt. You know what I mean? So
I got you, man. Hey, look, right. I have no problem, Justin, if that is your point of view. And I think the Jags are very appreciative of every fan that has that patience. And it can't last forever. But for those who feel that way and take that tack, I think that's fine. But at the same time, I'm not going to tell people who say, enough is enough. Here's Gus's record, and it is what it is, and I'm not satisfied, and I want to see change. I don't think those people are wrong either.
No,
you know, for feeling that way.
I think that's kind of what we're trying to point out. There's a lot that's been going well in Jacksonville. They're better than they were. Under this new regime,
no question.
They're a better football team than they were when they got here with Bradley and Caldwell, and we're getting to a point because we're watching kind of the same thing every week, not necessarily the same thing killing them, but the same kind of things happening where it is different ways that this football team is losing. Is Dave Caldwell and Arshad Khan willing to chalk that up to, well, it's a young team and we expected this kind of growth pattern? Or are they going to say this offseason, we don't think Gus Bradley is the guy that's going to help our young guys get to where they need to be? That's the question. And that doesn't say that they're not improving. They have. Are they improving enough in 2015, especially here in the last month of the season? Are they improving enough? We talked about it when they were getting ready for that Baltimore game. You lose big, you lose little, and then you start to win little. Are they winning enough of those close games right now for them to feel confident with Gus going into 2016?
Well, the answer is they're not winning enough of the close games. Now, that doesn't mean they necessarily don't think that Gus is the guy that can get them there.
Sure.
But I don't know what Dave Caldwell thinks on that score. I don't know what Sean Kahn thinks, who ultimately has the final say on those kind of things. But we'll find out in about 5 weeks exactly how they feel about that. Let's go to Tim and McClenny up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good morning. Good, good. I'm kind of the same way. I'm just tired of all the negativity. I believe they're improving quite a bit. I mean, last year, my wife said, we just want to be in the games. We want to be able to stay and watch the whole game every week. And it's been that way. I mean, they are slowly but surely improving week after week. I mean, they don't know how to close the game yet. And the defense, you just can't help it when you're injured. I mean, they're going to draft this year on defense. So next year, I expect a little more. I mean, not no two games more, but I expect them to be making a run at the playoffs. And I really think they're doing a great job.
All right, look, I don't think there's anything wrong with that point of view, and I think it's a defensible point of view if that's how you feel about it. You know, if you're taking the glasses half full approach, nothing wrong with that. And I think you can justify all the points you made on that score. There are others out there that feel that it's not happening soon enough. Frankly, I think the record should have been better this year. I think even with the improvement, They've blown games they shouldn't have blown. I think they should have two or three more wins right now. They maybe should be alone in first place right now, the way the season has played out. But they haven't. But, there are extremes in opinions out there. Some people think, hey, I'm okay with anything, and as long as we're showing some sign of improvement, that's enough for me. There are other people that think that nothing you can do now short of winning 8 games this season, or, you know, contending for the playoffs or whatever, is going to be enough. Forget about the improvement. It's not coming fast enough. It's up to you where you fall on the spectrum, really. And I think the Jags franchise just has to hope there are more people on Tim's side of the spectrum that have that patience and are willing to buy in, because it's going to be another off season of belief, Tony, because there's nothing that shows you win-loss wise, at least up until now. And we don't know how the season's going to end. Maybe they win three out of the last four. They end up with seven wins. That's a major improvement from last year. And it's a big step in the right direction. You're still going to be asking what if, but it'd be a lot easier, I think, to get enthusiastic about 2016 if they end this season on a high note. I don't know if that's going to happen, though. After losing to those two teams in back-to-back weeks, you can't expect them to beat anybody. Look at New Orleans. This went toe-to-toe with Carolina. That's one of those games that you would have circled and said that's one of the easier games we have left on the schedule.
Look, this Jacksonville team, it wouldn't surprise me if they won 3 out of 4. It wouldn't surprise me if they lost 3 out of 4.
It would surprise me if they lost them all.
Yeah, I mean, that's where they are. That's where they are right now. Here's what I can tell you. The last four games of the season, I feel pretty confident that in the fourth quarter they're going to be in the game. I feel pretty confident about that. Their ability to win those games in the fourth quarter, I have no confidence in that at this point in time, but I think they're going to have four opportunities to win football games in the last month of this season. Whether they can take advantage of those opportunities or not, I don't know, because they haven't shown any consistency doing it to this point.
All right, let's take a timeout. We'll come back to State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. Plenty more time for your calls and your reaction to where the Jags stand now, 4-8 after losing this one in yet another confounding way, 42-39. Offense, brilliant. Defense, anything but. Special teams, at least your kicker didn't help you out a whole lot yesterday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. I'm going to give you fair warning right now. We've got a text contest coming up in mere moments, a trivia contest with a very nice pair of prizes, and you can only text your answer in to 904-641-1010. In fact, you've got to pick up the prize yourself. We're not mailing it to you. So if you're outside the 904 area code, think hard about whether or not you want to text in your reply to this contest coming up here momentarily. But this date in football history, Tony, December 7th, 1980, the San Francisco 49ers erased a 35-7 halftime deficit to record, at the time, the biggest comeback win in NFL history, beating the New Orleans Saints 38-35 in overtime on Ray Wershing's 36-yard field goal. That's about the distance of an extra point these days, just pointing that out. Birthdays for this day. Born in 1968, former Jaguar Keith Gauganis turns 47 today. Former Jaguar Tom Mislinski played with the team in 95. He played with, how about all these teams that Mislinski played for, who, by the way, is the current Jaguar strength and conditioning coach, Milo, as they refer to him. Dallas Cowboys, Cleveland Browns, Redskins in 92, Bills in 93, the Bears in 93 and 94, the Jags in 95, the Steelers in 96 and 97, the Colts in 98, the Cowboys in 99, and back to the Steelers in 2000. That is what you call a journeyman. But Milo, happy birthday. Born in this date in 1968. Born in this date in 1973. Terrell Owens turns 42 years old today. And 9-time Pro Bowler, 6-time first-team All-Pro offensive lineman Alan Faneca, born in this date in 1976. He turns 39. Here's your trivia question, Jag fans. Other than having a birthday and the fact that they both played for the Jacksonville Jaguars, what specifically do Keith Gauganis and Tom Mislinski have in common? I'm looking for a very specific answer. And
is it not odd last names?
It is not odd last names. What's odd about Gauganis or Mislinski? Not a damn thing. You know what's odd? Guy who names, calls himself Osier, and he puts the H in front of the S. That's odd, okay?
It's a little odd.
That is very odd. All right, text us only with that, 641-1010, on what specifically Keith Gauganis and Tom Mislinski have in common, other than it's their birthday, they're born on the same day, and they both played for the Jaguars at one point in time. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, Cam Newton took a big shot during a third quarter Panthers drive yesterday in New Orleans, and the official checked in on Cam on the field to make sure he was not concussed. And then the official decided to allow him to stay on the field. Newton wound up throwing 5 touchdowns in the win as Carolina improved to 12-0 on the season. After the game, Cam was cleared and talked about the concussion protocol after watching other players in the league, said he thought The officials did a great job of checking on him during the game and making sure that he was clear. Indianapolis Colts quarterback Matt Hasselbeck left last night's Colts loss with shoulder and neck injuries, forcing Indy to play third-string quarterback Charlie Whitehurst. Hasselbeck's availability for this weekend's game here in Jacksonville is still a little bit unclear. So we'll see if Hasselbeck's available. Certainly Andrew Luck not expected to be available, so the Jags could be playing against Chuck Whitehurst this weekend. Once again, he, of course, beat them last year in Tennessee.
We've gotten a lot of fun guesses. We have a winner. I have not informed the winner yet that they're the winner. Let's ask Johnny O, John Osier. Oh, knows the Ozone, the man of a million names.
Is it Jaguars related, their similarity?
I don't know, is it? You tell me, John. You can give the answer if you know it, because we've already received the correct answer.
Other than being here together in 95, I don't recall a whole lot of similarities.
Yes, they were actually the main similarity, other than, I mean, that's a pretty big similarity.
Yeah.
They're born the exact same day.
Well, yeah.
They're both selected in the expansion draft, the original expansion draft by the Jaguars in the first 10 picks.
Oh, is that the commonality?
That's the commonality, right?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I knew that.
Oh, well, you could have mentioned it.
I thought that was part of the lead-up.
How could that be part of the lead-up? We didn't mention it.
Okay, well, yeah, they were both.
Right.
I got a question for you, John, as we get ready to talk to
you.
I'm sure you do. Did you intentionally wear, like, a Jaguars funeral attire? It's all black. It's the black pants.
Oh, yeah,
it's the black shirt. He's all black today.
That's how I roll.
Are you trying to tell Jacksonville something about this season?
Mystery to me.
Okay.
Yeah. No, just...
You guys talk amongst yourselves. I got to tell the winner that they've won.
I just rolled out of the rack.
Okay. Okay.
Threw it on.
Obviously disappointing yesterday for this Jaguars team, and it's the area of the team that looked like it was finding a way to improve, honestly, in the last month, and have been steady, and that's the defensive side of the ball. Still no pass rush, and that's an issue. We all knew that's going to be an issue throughout all of 2015. We kind of came to terms with that early, but to watch them play the way they did yesterday.
Well, I think the surprising thing, and as you write about a game, you sometimes sleep on it and sort of wake up and say, okay, what sort of stands out now that you know, you're not in the immediate aftermath. I think still the fact they couldn't stop the run was what was surprising. And I think they had 210 yards and 110 of them were from Mariota, but they still gave up 98, and it felt like more than 98 they were giving up to the backs.
It did.
I think it was 98 or 88. But whatever the number was, it felt like Tennessee was controlling that part. That surprised me because I hadn't felt that way except for Tampa. And I think that sort of set up a lot of the other things. Then, of course, you know, when you can't affect the quarterback in this league, it's hard to get the teams off the field, especially as little as they can affect them.
You can't always tell on television who is on the field in any given package of personnel.
Right.
But right before, final 10 minutes before the game kicked off, as the guys were discussing in the booth, watching down on the field how Aaron Colvin had his ankle heavily wrapped,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't know how much he'd be able to play, how effective he
right.
would be. You did see him chasing down Mariota and almost catch him on the 87-yarder, but didn't record a statistic.
Right.
You know, no tackles, no assists, no pass breakups, nothing. John, I can't tell. I don't know the answer. How much was he out there, could you tell, and how hampered was he?
It seemed, and again, I didn't chart how much he was out there, but when I looked, it seemed that he was not playing in the base, but that he was in as the true nickel a lot. I remember seeing him in what I was anticipating were blitz situations. You don't follow him throughout the whole play, but as I was looking through the binoculars, you would see him near the line of scrimmage looking like giving a blitz look. So I haven't checked the snap count. I don't think nearly as much as Grotz.
I just got to think in a game where you give up 42.
Yeah.
If Colvin's 100%, you know, look, there's so many things. Obviously, make your extra points. Don't snap it over the quarterback's head.
Right.
There are plenty of other things that you could point to, but that is one more thing that, man, maybe if they just had him, maybe he's the difference in one of those touchdown drives.
And it was odd. Aaron wasn't really, really specific. I talked to him after the games. He wasn't really, really, really specific on what had happened. He said basically something flared up before the game, and he said he knows he'll be fine. It was just bothering him all day. And couldn't quite work it out. And I said, well, would you have caught him had you not been hurt? He goes, I'd have caught him if I hadn't gotten blocked. You know, because he got knocked off.
Yeah, he looked like he was moving fine on that.
Yeah,
you know?
And you know, so maybe it was an adrenaline thing. Once your adrenaline goes, and that they didn't want to push him too hard in terms of plays, knowing that was there, they wanted to have him available in some capacity in a package. But yeah, you would think that would if he'd been on the field, maybe a little bit of a difference. But I can't sit there and say.
Oh, I know. I'm just just one more thing, you know, that we mentioned all the different scenarios that went down. You're going to stick around with us
absolutely
for a little bit. All right, we'll take some calls.
You and
next.
Miami looking windbreaker there.
What are you talking about? Is that you? Was it you who started on this?
That's
thing?
A Hurricanes based windbreaker.
This is a gray windbreaker.
You
with
took
a
the
10-10
off the
on
side,
the shoulders, Tony. How does he get Miami out of this? Honestly,
if you put a UM on that,
now you're just messing with
me. Hearns would be in here high fiving.
Put a UM with a SC in front of it, maybe. You kidding me? All right, stop it. By the way, I don't know the name of the winner yet because they texted it in, and Tyler's going to get in touch with them. But our winner of the trivia contest, who knew, unlike John Osier, that Milo and Gauganis were both picked in the expansion
draft.
I know you did. They won a $25 gift card to Peterbrook Chocolatier, as well as a $50 gift card for Anthony's et al. Anthony's, you can get a massage there at Anthony's, basically, right? It's, who couldn't use one of those at this point in the season? So congrats to our winner, and as part of the 1010XL Holiday Helper, that's what you get. And for more details on these and other great gift ideas, you can go to 1010XL.com and peruse the options that are right there. So that's a pretty nice little surprise giveaway for you. So we'll get the winner's name out to you as soon as Tyler gets in touch and we firm things up. But we'll take your calls next at 641-1010. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier from Jaguars.com, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, got a couple of interesting texts in. And first of all, somebody suggested, no matter what color it is, it's probably a long-sleeve grandma shirt. Okay, it's not. Although I did wear one of that ilk yesterday. It was my I like the long sleeve t-shirt, John. I'm sorry,
you look like you're coaching the Hurricanes.
It is a coach's windbreaker. Yes, the short sleeve. It's
got
great.
Chewing tobacco in
right.
the back pocket.
Seriously, if you want to tweet out a picture of this and people know how colorblind you are, that's
you're getting
fine.
Ready to go pitch a little BP.
I think you're just being a troll at this point in time, and that's fine as well. But somebody suggested whatever it is, it's probably of the long sleeve variety because I like the granny shirts. I had my NFL draft granny shirt on yesterday. If that's what you want to call it, I don't care. I like long sleeve t-shirts. Sue me.
What's a granny shirt? Is that a long sleeve t-shirt?
Well, I had the one. Mark Long said the one. I went to Bushkill Falls in Pennsylvania, which is
beautiful.
It's a great. Oh, seriously, it really is beautiful. Actually, you know, it's like you walk through these waterfalls. They've got these rope bridges going right over the falls. It's really cool.
Was there an airbrushed husky on it?
There was an airbrushed probably deer. there's no deer. There's no husky. There's a deer. Maybe a bear. There might have been a bear on there. I'm not sure. And I wore that in. And
did you get two so I can give one to my mom?
I was the kind that he said my grandmother would buy me. That's fine. I love my grandmothers. They're both dead. Thank you very much. What are you trying to say about my dead grandmothers?
That's great.
All right, let's get a couple calls in while we've got you here. Billy is calling in all the way from New Orleans, checking in here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Billy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. What's up?
Hey, so let's talk kicker. You guys are lambasting the kicker, and you know what? It's not his fault completely. The long snap, I mean, the bad snap and the defense, it's just crazy, and the kid's doing well. With the 3 to 4 games that we've won, he's won it, if you think about it. The field goals in Tennessee and the Miami game and, of course, the Baltimore game. So give the kid a break. He's working hard. The stats aren't looking good. I understand that. But, you know, he's making a difference in this team. And we got to get –
yesterday he made the difference between winning and losing, you could say.
Well, I don't – you know, what about the bad snap?
There are other factors. What about the Indy game when it comes down to a kick at the end of regulation and one in overtime?
No, you're probably right on that, but he smashed the crap out of those two balls.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. All right, Jags. Good catch there.
Yeah,
First of all, thank you for the call, Bill. We appreciate you listening out there in the Big Easy. But No one has said it is all Jason Myers' fault.
No.
But he certainly contributed because he put them off sequence
right.
with the extra points, and then they end up going for two, and who knows, might have missed that one too, and then you missed another one on top of that, and yet it turns into a field goal game when it should have been a tie football game.
I certainly focused in writing and discussing the game, focused more on the defense because that's more indicative, and when you score 39 points, whatever the kicker does, you expect to win. But you can't ignore that. For the last month and a half, one of my keys has been you got to make makeable kicks.
It's a good point you make, though. When you score six touchdowns, it shouldn't come down to a couple missed extra points.
Right.
But in this case, it did.
But in the NFL, it sometimes does.
Right.
And in the NFL, you have to make makeable kicks. And we've been saying, I'm saying 6 weeks, probably all season, that this team is not going to play in very many games that they're comfortably ahead in the fourth quarter, which means they're going to come down to a few points. Which means you have to get the points that your offense presents you with. And they left three on the field yesterday that the offense earned, and it should have been easy, no-brainer. Even at 31 or 32 yards, you shouldn't miss six in a year.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how else to say it.
Which is the most in the National Football
League.
Sure. I realize missed extra points have increased dramatically because we understand that. As somebody said earlier, missed extra points is what the NFL wanted. Well, maybe they did, but that's not what a team wants.
Right.
That maybe the league did want some more drama, and they're certainly getting it. And I think yesterday, it's odd that we saw for the first time ever in the NFL, and it happened twice in the same day, but one of them got called back,
okay.
A blocked extra point return for two
right.
the other way, which is a college rule until this year.
Right.
And so they have tried to create more drama in these games. And the extra point has become a dramatic play. We're all just sitting around saying, when we chart things and we're making notes from the game, you can't write down the score now until the thing goes through the uprights.
Yeah, I'm still, to be honest, not a big fan of the rule because if there was a rule that encouraged more two-point conversions, I'd be all for it.
Yeah, there is one. It's called the extra points law. Longer, and people are missing
them.
Huh?
But it still doesn't.
But some teams it does. Pittsburgh's doing it.
Well,
I mean, because, John, teams are stuck in the coaches play the safe role. This
right.
is what's expected. This
because
is what's
you
ought
to be able to make a 33-yard field goal.
You should be able to make it.
That should still be a gimme.
But after a certain point, when you miss enough of them, eventually some team is going to work an entire offseason on two-point conversions and is going to go, with rare exception, they're going to go a lot heavier, put it that way, than they are right now. If you can get to the point where you're making 51% of your two-pointers, you should go for it every single time.
Yeah.
Because the math works out for you.
I wouldn't do it.
I would. Are you kidding me? I mean, you wouldn't be, but that's the problem with football, man. I mean,
I'm the problem with football. No, the problem is that jacket.
The problem with football is that coaches live by the credo of, I'm going to drive it to the other team's 40-yard line and punt. And then they kick it in the end zone, they give them a net 20 yards, and one play later, they're right back where they started. I mean, coaches have the aggression chased out of them oftentimes because when they try something and fail, they get lambasted for it, and it's easy to fall back, well, the chart says I should do this. And that's what they go with.
It's a percentage league.
It is a percentage league. Let's go to the phones once again. Mike in Virginia. We're all over the place, John. The reach of this program knows no bounds. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Mr. Zone, good to talk to you. Hey, I'm up here in the D.C. area, so I get D.C. football. I get Baltimore football. Listen to you guys on the radio. So, as I was telling your screener, I believe that from a comparable perspective, our quarterback compares favorably to Aaron Rodgers. I believe he's that kind of guy, throwing the ball hard, winging it around, running a little bit. I'd like to think that TJ is kind of a Emmitt Smith clone, maybe not going to break it forever, but finds holes, stays on his feet, makes moves. And our wide receivers are doing great. I mean, they compare well. Big physical guys jump up, maybe not Dez Bryant, but that kind of guy. On the downside here, what I'm not seeing is, and I wanted to ask Zone this question, where does Bradley fit in a comp perspective? I mean, if you look at deep coordinators that have hung around after suffering through, you've got maybe some Belichick, maybe some Ron Rivera, maybe some Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati that have been able to do this, but what's the upside there, and what is Bradley doing that we can say, these are his strengths and these are his weaknesses, and we have some upside here or there.
Well, it's hard if you consider him a defensive-minded coach, and that's the phrase I keep getting in the inbox. Yeah, they're not playing well defensively. I go back to they have built this offense through the draft, and I believe that the draft will be very defensive-heavy next year. So, not next offseason. So I think that's when you will see the defensive improvement that you've seen from the offense. In terms of what is Gus Bradley, so far he's been a guy who has kept this team together. The team has not quit on him, and the team believes in what he's doing, which I believe is what a head coach has to do in this league. But if you're grading him on how the defense has played, then the defense this year at least has had too many situations where it has not been able to get the other offense off the field.
Right.
And
it's not been good.
I'm not trying to avoid the question. I'm not sure who does he compare with. That's always tough to tell until the guy has success. I mean, he hasn't had success, so I can't sit here and compare him to Rivera. I don't know if they'll get through this and have a surge where you can say, okay, he had this bad streak at the beginning because they were building, and now they're going to build the future. I don't think that coaching and, I don't think that coaching is the reason that they are 4-8 or that they have not won as many games as they should.
By the way, we're excited to sell tickets next year around that trio of Aaron Rodgers, Emmitt Smith, and Dez Bryant.
That'd be awesome.
Phenomenal.
Well,
I would not, Aaron Rodgers is not the comparison I would use for Blake Bortles. Aaron Rodgers has always been so much more efficient with the football. Aaron Rodgers' only season in which he threw 13 interceptions was his first year as a starter. He threw 28 touchdowns.
Right.
Again, this is his first year as a starter, 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns, 13 picks for an entire season. Aaron Rodgers doesn't turn the football over. Now, does he never turn over? Of course not.
Well,
but
I think
he's
maybe
single-digit interceptions for every year but two as a starter in his career.
I think maybe the mobility, the ability to throw on the run, which Blake was, pretty good yesterday, moving around in the pocket, buying a little bit of time, setting things up the right way. That had some, I guess Aaron Rodgers is sort of the personification of quarterbacks who are doing that well right now. And in that respect, that was a good thing to see from Blake. It looked like he's doing that thing that I think quarterbacks have to do more and more. But I agree with you. I don't think Blake is ever going to be, I've said it a million times in this program, he's not going to be 73% guy.
Aaron Rodgers is 61% this year. It's the worst of his career.
Right, and that's staggering to see in that because you're so used to him being right on the money. He's almost Aikman accurate, who is incredibly accurate. But, I think, Blake's comparison, I always hate to compare guys because you're not going to wind up right like him. But
right.
Brett Favre still makes a lot of sense because I think he's going to throw some picks. I think he's going to take chances and be that guy who tries to extend plays, and it's going to bite him some, but it, again, 27-13 this year, it looks like he is starting to get it at a faster rate than I thought he would.
And I'll say this, he may put the record out of his own reach for a while if the Jags get better,
sure.
Because if they get better, they're going to be in more games, they're going to be in the lead in the fourth quarter in games, and they're going to be running the ball late in games instead of,
right.
Dramatic, try to scramble in the last 5 minutes and put two touchdowns on the board. So he may end up with 35 touchdowns this year, and that may stand as the mark for a while.
Yeah, and 35 is not, 35 is not bad. It's really good compared to anything else that's been
around.
Damn right. But, it sort of reminds you maybe a little bit, and I'm not trying to compare the season, how it ended to 96, but in 96, Brunell, I think, threw for like 4,300 yards.
4,300 and change.
And never approached that again.
Right.
Because they were better after that and didn't have to throw as much.
Let's go to Tom in Fleming Island next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I just have been analyzing the last two games, the teams, 2-9, and it looks like the quarterback did a pretty good job. And if we had the system to put more pressure on the quarterbacks, those two quarterbacks are very good quarterbacks, and that seemed to have been the area that was a concern as opposed to the missed ball by Bortles when it was snapped over his head or Myers. And as far as the coach, let's say this, if Gus was fired today, there'd be three or four teams out there that would grab him, snatch him up so fast, it'd be pathetic.
But I don't know if that's the case.
Oh, you don't think so?
No. Well, let's be honest now. Gus has won 11 games as a head coach in nearly 3 years. Those coaches don't get snapped up immediately as soon as they're let go. That's the reality, man. I mean, Gus is a great guy, great motivator, and I agree with you. He's kept the team together. Charlie Casserly was on with XL Primetime within the last month, and the thing that stood out to me, he said, when you're a general manager evaluating a coach, the first thing you look at when you're deciding whether to replace a guy is his team still playing
hard
for
him? Does he have the team?
Right. Has he lost the locker room? And there's never been a hint of that. Now, is that enough?
That's the judge of a head coach, not
correct.
A coordinator.
Right, of a head coach. But no, I don't believe Gus Bradley would be snapped up right away. I think he'd get a job in the league, but not as a head coach.
No,
maybe he'd get another one at some point.
Yeah.
But
I think they would have to. I mean, and I don't think it's going to be a situation where he's available to be snapped up. They make that clear. But if it was, I do think it would be a situation where there would be a rehab of an image because it's 11 games. To another owner.
Is he 11-33?
I think so. To another owner, it would be a tough sell without some time.
Right. How are you going to bring in this guy who won 25% of his games with this other team? And you're going to say, no, he would not be. I mean, that's quite frank. So, look, I'm not trying to push Gus out the door. In fact, Tony and I were talking about this before we came on the air today. We still, now, barring, you go 0-4 to end the season, and all bets are off, I believe, man. I'm sorry. You go 4-12 after going 3-13 and 4-12 the two previous seasons. I'm not going to try to predict what Shad Khan wants to do at that point in time, but let's suppose he doesn't. I don't think Gus is getting fired this offseason.
I agree.
You know, and so, and again, I'm not. We
can't predict the future. You don't know what's going to happen the next month.
That's right.
There's still three. I mean, there's still a quarter of the season left, so it's impossible. But speculating, I agree with you.
And I guarantee you, there are people out there right now going, "How can you say he should be back?" We're not saying. Look, we're just saying what we think will happen, not what should or should not. I don't think it's unreasonable for a Jaguar fan to say, "Really, 11-33, and we haven't fired him yet." That's a football fan's prerogative.
Sure.
We try to look at, we're very close to the situation, and we're trying to look at all the unique things that go into the way they chose to build this, but that was their choice on how they chose to go this route. So, any fan who wants to see a regime change, I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I understand fans that say, you know what? From where we were to where we are now, I am satisfied with the improvement. It's not where I ultimately want to be. But clearly this team is getting better, and they found their quarterback, which is the most important thing, and they can point to some young, rising, exciting players, call them stars, if you will, Allen Robinson, Telvin Smith, and a handful of guys like that. You know, that's a beautiful thing about being a sports fan. There's no one opinion that everyone's going to share on that.
Sure. It was as split in my inbox. It was as split down the middle of that.
Right.
As I can remember, because there are people who look at it and go, wow, I see this, I see this, I see this. And then the very next email is, who thinks could be the next head coach?
Right.
So, I mean,
right.
I get it.
I totally get it.
And I get why you see both. You know, it's
because we get the same one,
sure.
Tony.
No, we totally do. And look, I think Gus Bradley's going to be here next year, too. And I want to go back to something you said just a moment ago, and this can be quick, John. But you said that's not how head coaches lose job. That's how coordinators do. Is Bob Babich here next year?
That I don't know. I believe so, but I don't know.
That's a Gus decision, obviously.
Right.
I mean, he's already moved on from one offensive coordinator, and things need to pick up. But, look, there are extenuating circumstances. People think you're making excuses. It's our job to say, anybody can say defense stinks. All right, but let's look a little deeper. Why does the defense stink? Is some of it out of your control? Yes, Dante Fowler, but that doesn't mean everything's out of your control.
Right.
There should never be a scenario when Paul Posluszny is chasing Kendall Wright around on the field, yeah, in my opinion, in coverage. So that, to me, is a scheme issue. You're getting out-schemed if that's occurring. So there are pluses and minuses on both sides.
There are times those situations arise by players calling things on the field that put the players into that situation, too.
And that may be the case as well. And that's why
I have no idea.
That's why when you watch a broadcast or you're there at the game, you say, wow, this is so-and-so's fault. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. It's Olsen's fault in the red zone. Well, wait a minute. Blake Bortles checked out of some run plays that were called there, and he got tricked. So until you have a complete picture.
It's rarely one thing in football.
All right, we got a break here. Coming back on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight. Was this the most disappointing of the Jaguars' losses this year? If not, which one sticks with you the most? Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up. We'll also get to a couple more of your calls momentarily in a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. You can even, they tell me, trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Guns4Jax.com, guns the number 4, J-A-X.com. Or visit them at South Lane Avenue, 1233 South Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Quickly through these phone calls here, let's go Frank at the Beaches next up here on 1010XL. Hi, Frank.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for the call.
Good. You got it. What's up?
Hey, 2 weeks ago, Jaguars were sitting 4-6 and pretty much still had a chance. And then we lose to a team that was on a 6-game losing streak. Then go and lose to a team who's lost 11 straight home games, scored 39 points, and still lost. Just my opinion, but I think they need a coaching change.
All right, that's fine. Thank you, Frank. I don't think it's an unreasonable opinion. I get it. It made worse by what you watched San Diego do to bookend that Jaguar game. On the road, they torched the Jags. At home, they scored 3 points against Kansas City, 3 against Denver. Now, yesterday they lost their 2 top receivers in the game. They lost Stevie Johnson and Dontrell Inman to injuries during the game. Notwithstanding,
right.
they've been in a funk offensively until they came here.
And again, you know, and it's an excuse. Denver and Kansas City, what do they do well?
Rush the passer, sure. Yeah. No, I got it.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
If you rush the passer right now, Chargers can't do anything against you.
Right.
If you can't, Philip Rivers is pretty good.
Let's get to Mike at the Beaches next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, so, like you said, excuses. I'm not saying they're excuses. I think they're good reasons. But what does it look like next year, assuming Gus is back? What is the evaluation? Because, sure, we'll have some defensive draft picks, but they'll be young. So that might be the excuse or reason next year. So, you know, would we then be saying, okay, well, Gus needs the roster to mature? What is it next year? Is it the division? Is it a win total? I got to think it's got to be something concrete for Shad Khan.
That's the only thing you can. What is it for Shad Khan? That's all that really matters. We could all sit here and try to come up with a bunch of criteria that Gus has to hit all these boxes and check them off. I don't know what it's going to be for Shad Khan. Maybe it's going to be the playoffs. What if they went 8-8 next year and got screwed by the refs on two horrible end game calls and cost them from winning the division? Or who knows? I mean, it's impossible to say. At least for me, it is. I don't know what's on in Shad Khan's mind.
Yeah, I would think you have to have a winning record next year.
Oh, definitely.
I'd be stunned if that's not. Yeah, I mean, and that sounds pretty tame coming off 3 straight seasons like you're having. But I mean, if you want the answer, I think they would have to go at least 9-7 or an 8-8, like you said, with extenuating circumstances. They need to win football games.
All right, let's go to David in Oakleaf to wrap things up on the phone lines this morning. David, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I think it's ridiculous to call for Gus's job at this point. I'm a season ticket holder. I remember last year at one point we had eight rookie starters last year, for goodness sake. And to go from, I mean, we've had the improvement every single year that Gus has been here. It hasn't been, you know, a great deal of improvement all the time, but I think that they're making strides now. I mean, I just don't get it with all the you know, calling for Gus's job. Just like with, like Tom Coughlin, okay, Tom Coughlin's won, you know, a couple of Super Bowls up there in New York. Now all of a sudden, what is it? One day he wakes up and he can no longer coach anymore. I don't get that thinking at all. But I'm happy with what the team is doing and the direction that they're going. One thing I do say is that the defense needs to wrap up more and stop just hitting people without wrapping up. But thanks a lot for letting me spew that.
All right, you got it, man. Thanks for the call.
I agree with your last point. No doubt about that.
Yeah. One last text, by the way, in the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line from Kevin on the west side. He said, how about some love for what Greg Olsen has done with Blake in this offense after the fan base wasn't thrilled with the hire? We were just talking about that on the break.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very happy with what Olsen has done. And the bottom line to me, you can nitpick play calling, this, that. The bottom line, the team is scoring about a touchdown more per game this year than they were last year. That's a major step. And I think there's plenty of upside to take that to a much higher level even next year.
And as much as anything, if you look at the body work over 12 games, it looks like there's a plan. They know what they want to do. They haven't been able to run and establish that as much as they've wanted to. And then a couple of weeks ago, or against San Diego, the run pass balance was an issue. But overall, through the course of the season, they are starting to develop an identity. They know what they want to try to be. I think they'll be more of a running team next year when they can get Linder and whatever they do at center fixed moving forward. But they don't look confused and disorganized.
No, and they take shots down the field. They put points on the board, man. I mean, they got these wide receivers roll. You know, they're getting return on their investment in the offensive skill guys that they drafted. Even Rashad Green yesterday.
Right.
You like to see him, you know, stay healthy for a stretch now, but, you know, catching a touchdown.
I don't even know what their ranking is. Where are they offensively?
I'm not sure where they are, but, I mean, last year they were scoring about 15.6.
Right.
That was about 6 points per game higher coming into this week. Add on 39, and I wouldn't doubt that ticked up a point or two.
For 4 or 5 years, or for the first 3 years I was back, 4 years, whatever it is, 11, 12, 13, and 14, I rarely even looked at the NFL stats when they came out on Monday. Because I knew the Jags offensively would be 31 or 32. Now they're out of that area where you feel like they can't function and they where you feel like they can't score enough to win games.
I'm sorry.
Good. No.
I was going to say they're at 22.9 right now, which is about middle of the pack compared to 15.6 last year, which is over 7 per game more. Arizona, New England, Carolina all score over 31 points per game. Then you've got Cincinnati, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, the Giants, Seattle, New Orleans, Buffalo, the Jets, Green Bay, Oakland, Atlanta, Philly. Those are the teams ahead of the Jags, somewhere between 23 and 28 points per game.
And all that aside, not to, you know, praise Greg Olsen. How many times in the last couple of years at halftime were they down by 10? And you told yourself, well, it's over.
Oh, it's over.
You feel that way now?
No, not at all. I mean, down by 10, just, you know, you feel if the defense could do their part, down by 10 with 6 minutes to go is very doable
for
this football team. No, I'm with you on the offensive improvement. That's 16th officially.
And that's what you have to have in the NFL. You can't be out of a game just because you're down by double digits in the NFL.
Let's say they added 4 more points a game to their tally next year from what they're doing right now. That would put them at 5th in the league. Is that unreasonable?
About 14, Mike.
Is it unreasonable to think that they could score 4 more points per game than what they're doing next year? I mean, that puts them as a borderline top 5 offense in the National Football League in point production. And, you know, you got work to do in other areas right now. Tony, fan feedback spotlight today asking folks, was this the most disappointing? And if not the most disappointing, which game stands out to you in that regard? What do we get?
Here's what we got from Jimbo. It will be until Gus loses to Charlie Whitehurst next weekend for a second time. From Irish Jaguar, yes, I don't want to talk about it anymore. From Brian, yes, this was a playoff eliminator and showed all the traits of a Gus Bradley coach team, 11-33. From Eric, I think the loss to the Bucks is still more disappointing. That one could have turned the season. From Drunken Fun Guy, until next week's, yeah. From Jason, yes, they were 2-9 and lost 11 straight home games, and we beat them 2 weeks prior. Inexcusable. From Daniel, no, the loss to the Colts was the most disappointing. Needed better kicking. From Will, in my mind, a loss is a loss. From Cristiano, a loss where my quarterback throws 5 touchdowns and no interceptions? Not at all. Colts loss. All the missed field goals. From Joey, Colts in overtime, that hurt just a little bit more. From Chris, very close, but I have to go with the Colts game. From Demetrius, weeks 4 and 5, Indy and Tampa. Both teams had porous O-lines, below-average defenses, and relatively new starters in at quarterback. From Dirty Brown, we lost to Mike Mularkey. That's what makes me the saddest. From Die Hard Jag, Jets game because I'm $1,500 lighter in the wallet traveling to see them in New York City. Hashtag thanks, Nick Marshall.
At Jay Nubb sent this. He said it might be a fun stat for the listeners. Blake Bortles in 2015, 27 touchdown passes. Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater's careers combined, 27 touchdown passes. Bridgewater's the most overrated quarterback in the National Football League. Yeah, they're winning games. Would you trade Blake Bortles for Teddy Bridgewater?
I haven't watched him a whole lot.
Wake me when he gets to 10 TDs on the year. Honestly. I mean, he's got Adrian Peterson to take all the pressure off him in Minnesota, and he is the ultimate definition of game manager with a noodle arm. Just unbelievable. But people, you know, hey, look, they're winning, so sure, it must be him. Well, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. I doubt you'd choose him over Dan Marino if you're picking sides.
No. It's always, there is a gray area there with the winning thing with quarterbacks, and I get that it's important, but it tends to get overplayed sometimes in the argument.
Yeah, you got to win. Look, Blake's going to have to win.